Okay, folks, let's go ahead and get started. We have a ton to cover in an hour and 15 minutes, so I want to take a running start right into designing apps for the Windows Store. But first, good afternoon. Day one of Tech Ed, you've got to have more energy than that, right? I mean, if you don't have more energy on that on day one, you're never going to make it to day five. Good afternoon, everybody. That's what I'm talking about. My name is Chris Mayo. I design software. I'm a senior user experience evangelist at Microsoft. And when I'm not at conferences like Tech Ed with the opportunity to speak about designing software, I'm designing software with our partners and customers. And in particular, I focus on Windows Store apps. So I work with kind of like an embedded member, embedded reporters when they're out in the field. I'm an embedded Microsoft UX designer slash developer, and I embed myself into various teams with customers that we're working with on creating apps that you probably see in the Windows Store today. So this session is going to be a little bit of combination of theory and a little bit of combination of practice and experience around designing an app for the Windows Store, an app that not only fits into some of the different experiences that are built into Windows 8, like charms and app bars and the content layout and stuff like that, but also what you can do to make a unique and compelling experience for your Windows Store app. So we wanted to do something really, really different with Windows 8. And with each release of Windows, there's kind of like that expected, improvement in performance, and improvement in manageability, and improvement in securability, and various features like that. But we wanted to do something really, really radically different with Windows 8, right? We wanted to create an OS that was not only did all those great things that you'd expect from a desktop OS, but we also wanted to create a mobile touch-first app experience, including the start screen and the Windows Store and the apps themselves. So you could also have an OS that you could pick up in a device and just use touch and have this really great touch experience. And there were a lot of things that we built into Windows 8, like the charms bar and this concept of an app bar and the way that content is laid out in really a content-first or a content-centric way. And we built that, baked that right into Windows, and we built it right into the platform and make it easy for you to develop apps that kind of met that aesthetic and participated in some of those Windows experiences. Well, now, me as an app designer, or you sitting in the audience as an app designer or an app developer, you also want to do something that's really, really unique, right? That your users are going to fall in love with. They're going to download your app, millions of times and rate it 5 out of 5 stars. They're going to tell your friends, and you're going to drive a Ferrari and make more software and buy more Ferraris and all that stuff. All that stuff's going to happen. You can just trust me on that, right? And there's a couple of things that you need to do to make that happen, right? Well, one is your app needs to be unique, right? It needs to be compelling, right? And there's also an opportunity for you to fit into, kind of in this Venn diagram up here on the stage or up on the screen, some of those Windows 8 experiences. And that's going to do something very, very cool. We wanted to build things like app bars and charms and this content-centric UI and the touch language and stuff like that. We wanted to build that into Windows 8 so every Windows Store app was instantly familiar, right, to all the users. So, like, for example, when they wanted to go find settings for the app and how to configure the app, they didn't have to go and search around in each individual app they download from the Windows Store. They know that if they want to configure the app, they can just grab the charm from the side, grab the settings charm, and they'll find all the settings for the app right there. Well, that makes your app instantly comfortable, and it makes users confident, and it gives users an opportunity to fall in love with and discover all the great things that your app does. Again, so they fall in love with your app, they download it a bunch, they tell their friends, they rate it 5 stars, and you drive a Ferrari. So what we're going to be talking about during the course of this session are what are those things in that center of the Venn diagram, right, that you want to design great experiences for so your app is not only unique and compelling, but it's also familiar and gives users confidence. So they feel like that this is just a great extension of the Windows 8 experience, and they kind of know how your app works, and they can just get started, you know, using it. Okay? And that's a core element of great Windows Store app design. So let's kind of dive into a demo scenario, and we're going to be talking about some of the different elements of the design that we came up with for this admittedly very, very simple app. It's called Contoso Cookbook. It's a very, very simple app, and it's very, very scoped, but it shows all of these different aspects of designing a Windows Store app in one app. And we'll talk about some of the decisions that we made on the design team in designing this application, and what are some of the trade-offs that we made, and how did the app end up looking the way it did. Just as an example of a conversation that we're going to have together about some of the design decisions and design opportunities you have with the Windows Store. So let's just look at the app right quick. And I assume everybody's seen Windows 8 before, right, and seen Windows Store apps. So raise your hand if you've seen Windows 8 before. Yeah, everybody's seen it. So I'll just focus on the app, and we'll just go buzz through the app really quickly, and then we'll start talking about all the different things that we did to design this to make it a great Windows Store app. So here it is right here on the start screen. I'll go ahead and launch the app. There's my splash screen with a little pinwheel to kind of show that I'm loading up some data. Now, Contoso Cookbook is a cookbook application, but we wanted to be a little bit different. We wanted to kind of merge that, hey, I want to find a recipe that's really, really good and tasty that I want to make. And I also share recipes with my friends all the time, and we exchange recipes, and I, you know, sometimes like to see what my friends are cooking and stuff like that. So we added a social element to it. So it's cookbook plus social. And we'll talk about how we came up with that idea here in a minute. But if you look at Contoso Cookbook, like a lot of Windows Store apps, you can see that it's content-centric, that all of the different data that you might expect, or the different content you might expect, like, hey, here's some featured recipes. These are the new and different recipes that are coming out, and you know, the Contoso folks would want to, you know, editorialize this section to say, here are the new recipe packs, or here's some new recipes that are available. I have the social feed, so what's going on in my social graph of friends with Contoso Cookbook. I can see I have a new invite from Carrie to be her friend. I can see that Tom purchased the Italian recipe pack. You can see he also reviewed bouillabaisse. I can see kind of that feed of what my friends are doing, right? So if my friend reviews a recipe, maybe I want to go try that out. If I haven't purchased it yet, maybe I get an opportunity to purchase that recipe. Contoso Cookbook makes some money. I can mark recipes as favorites. I can add recipes, my own recipes, to the catalog. I can go through and browse recipes, like go into, you know, Chinese cuisine and then see, oh, here's steam bun baos. And then I can make this recipe. I can see all the ingredients. I can see all the different steps for it. I can see reviews, and you know, I can go ahead and just review the recipe right here just by, you know, typing on the screen. You know, if I was doing touch, or I've got a keyboard up here, right? Read different recipes. I can navigate back to the beginning. Like, you know, check out my profile, all my friends, you know, accept these friend invites and so on. Right? So I just accepted Carrie, and now she's my friend. And then I'm interacting with all the charms. So if I'm searching, you know, I had a lot of tomatoes on hand and I wanted to, you know, make something with tomatoes in it, I could see, you know, all the recipes that have tomato or Tom in the title. I could see everybody that's got, you know, tomatoes as some of the ingredients if I wanted to use those. If I was searching for my friend Tom, I can see that Tom is one of my friends and so on. So that's my app. Right? And that's kind of the finished product. That's where we ended up. And admittedly, it's really, you know, simple, straightforward concept, straightforward, you know, as far as layout, but things like app bars and navigation and so on. We built all these different aspects of a great Windows Store app into this app. Right? So if I go back to my slides, let's talk about how we actually designed that app. So a group of UX designers and myself at Microsoft actually sat down and went through the entire process using the UX guidelines that are up on design.windows.com and designed the app from start to finish. So we came up with the idea, information architecture, screen layout, all the interaction, and so on. And one thing that I've noticed more than anything else that determines, you know, the success of building a mobile application in general, if not a Windows Store app in specific, is having, one, a great idea, right? And then two, being very, very, very focused throughout the design and the development process on reinforcing that great idea with every user flow and every feature that you build into the app, right? And this focus on greatness really, really helps you have, a mobile touch-based application that's focused and easy to use and just easy for users to kind of get into the flow of the app. I'm always kind of concerned when we start like the design or the development process and people are talking about the 10 features they're going to implement rather than what the app's going to do. So usually when I'm designing an app, I'll go through a process sitting down with the team and really start talking about what's this app going to be great at, right? And we'll actually come up with a great at statement on the app, right? And then we'll go through, so what is this app going to be great at? How is it going to be different and unique from every other app in the store? And then we'll go through and we'll actually build each user flow, so each result that's going to happen in the app and all the features that provide those user flows. And we'll check and balance those against that great at statement and remove everything else. Because the last thing you want, is a cluttered or confusing app. Right, with that's full of features that don't really add up to much of anything. You want every feature to reinforce what that app's going to be doing or what that app's going to be great at. So this is what we came up with Contoso Cookbook. So there were lots of cooking apps, there were lots of social apps. We thought it'd be really cool to kind of enable that thing that everybody does with recipes. They share them, right? So we want to create a social recipe application. So this is the statement, the great at statement that we actually wrote on the whiteboard in our design room or in our Scrum room. And it says, Contoso Cookbook is a great app at helping friends discover, prepare, and share recipes. That's what we wanted to build. And through the entire design process and development process, we checked and balanced every user flow and every feature against that statement. So when we were coming up with the user flows or the end results that users should be able to accomplish within the app, we checked it against that statement. So this is what we came up with. We brainstormed over like it was 80 different features and user flows, and we whittled it down to three user flows and a bunch of features that supported them. But this is what we wanted the app to do. And we'll be, as we go through this presentation or go through the demo and talk about these design elements, we're going to come back to this, and we're going to check and balance what we're doing against these statements. So find a recipe that I want to make, prepare that recipe, and share my cooking experiences with friends, right? These are the things that I want to enable in my app. And then I went through it and actually brainstormed a bunch of features that would support those user flows, like browsing recipes. Maybe I want to browse by cuisine or filter, sort, search. I want to be able to search for recipes by title, cuisine, ingredient. Manage my favorite recipes, like adding a recipe or add or remove a recipe from my favorites list. This all supports that browse recipes or find recipes that I want to make scenario. Preparing a recipe is seeing ingredients, seeing the origin of the recipe, maybe viewing photos to see if it looks tasty or not, right? Sharing cook experiences is me, being able to update my photo, invite or accept and reject friend requests from other people, and then share my recipe activity, like writing a review or adding a photo and so on, and have that show up in my social stream that all my friends see, right? And again, this is something that I find really, really helpful to do early on in the process, and then check against that during the course of not only the entire design process, but also the development process, because that helps you keep focused, right? And when you're talking about a touch mobile UI that maybe people are using while they're in the kitchen, they want to have a mouse and keyboard, or maybe they're sitting on the couch kind of a thing. It just helps you be focused, and it helps the app provide a really, really great experience. So the next thing that you're going to notice when you're looking at Windows Store apps is they look radically different than any other software you've probably seen before. And it's all about the content. It's all about the content and the UI that supports the scenarios. And in real estate, they say the most important thing is location, 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 right? Ha, ha, ha. It's kind of the same thing for Windows Store apps. The most important thing in Windows Store apps is the content, the content, the content. And if you look at, apps in the Windows Store, like let's look at the sports app. I mean, you'll notice here that the content that's supplied or the UI that's supplied on the page is all about their core scenarios, right? So what would the core scenarios be for a sports app, right? A sports news app? Well, it'd be, reading news stories and then probably customizing the news feed so you get exactly the news stories that you care about, your teams, your leagues, and so on. Well, if you look at the UI for this app, you can see here's, a news story, right, on the Heat, in the championships. Here's a little unboxing type of app that lets you take a tour of the app, add your favorite sports, right, and then dismiss that once you know how to customize, you've done the customization. And then all the different places that you can sit there and, you know, go into the different leagues that you care about, like the NHL, and see what's going on with the Stanley Cup and so on. Well, the same thing with Contoso Cookbook. I mean, you can see here that what we wanted to do is we wanted to enable you to be able to see recipes. And what's the most important thing about recipes is, one, I want to see if it looks tasty or not. That's generally how people make the decision. Then they want to know, you know, is it well reviewed? Do other people think it's a great recipe? How long does it take to make? And so on. Just like, hey, here's what my friends are doing. And we built the UI to really support having that content-first UI. So it really kind of came, it was really easy to see that this is about recipes. This is about my friends. I can see pictures of my friends and what they're doing. These are about my favorite recipes and so on. And there's other things that you can do in the app, like mark a recipe as favorite or pin it to the start screen and stuff like that. And all those features are there, right? But the thing that we wanted to do is kind of that 80-20 rule, where let's make sure that the primary thing that people want to do as far as, you know, see recipes and prepare recipes is really easy for them to do without a lot of clutter on the UI. Okay? So when you're designing those pages, I mean, it's easy to kind of fall in love with that context-centric UI. I mean, when I'm thinking about recipes and I'm thinking about food and I see, you know, first and foremost that photo, a quick description, some reviews, and, you know, some data about how long it takes to make, it's really easy for me to see whether that's, you know, a recipe that I want to make or not, right? But there's other features that you might be thinking about, like how do I lay out that content in such a way without using like grid lines and boxes that maybe I did on desktop apps, right? How do I make that application easy to navigate, right, without, you know, putting a bunch of tabs on the screen, without having like a bunch of links like read more and stuff like that, all these things that might kind of clutter up the UI and distract from the UI. And then how do I provide all the commands that I'd normally provide in a UI, like being able to mark something as a favorite or being able to pin it without, you know, putting a button on each individual recipe that says, hey, this could be a favorite, or this could be pinned to the start screen. Well, when we're creating a content-centric UI, what we want to think about more than anything else is only put the core UI elements on the page, right? So for us in Contoso Cookbook, what we really wanted to do is we wanted that image and the title and the review data and the preparation time to really be what people see first and what people notice first, so they can decide whether they care about that recipe or not. And all those different elements of UI, as far as the layout, the navigation, and the commanding, we wanted to use some of the UX guidelines that were created for Windows Store apps to provide all those features, but to do it in such a way that content really, really shines. Okay, and that's what we're going to be talking about the next couple of slides, is how to do that. How do I create layout using the content itself without using boxes and group boxes and lines and grids and so on? How do I make an application that's easy to navigate without having to have like a bunch of tabs or a list control and stuff like that? How can I build that navigation directly into the content? And then commanding, how can I use like either direct manipulation or on-demand UI to have all those same features that I need to support my user flows or my user scenarios without littering the screen with a whole bunch of buttons for every single thing you can possibly do? Okay? That's what we're going to talk about. So first, let's talk about layout. So if you have designed for the web before, if you designed for print, you're probably very familiar with the concept of using a grid to lay out your UI. And in Windows Store apps, this is no different than either of those, where we're really using a consistent grid, positive, negative space, and then the content itself to lay out the content. We use the content to actually structure the page. And we can do some interesting things like use size and position to kind of emphasize some content versus other content. But the content itself provides the structure of the page or the structure of the app. And if we do that in a very, very consistent way across all the different pages, it's got a nice, clean, and quality look to it. So when we think about the grid, we need to think about units. And we're all familiar with pixels, right? And pixels are awesome, but when you're talking about working across different screen sizes, you don't want to work in pixels themselves. You want to think about units and subunits. And we'll talk about scaling to different screen sizes and scaling to different screen resolutions here in a minute. But by default, you want to work in a 20 by 20 pixel unit. We'll call that a unit through the course of the discussion around layout and scaling. And then subunits, so 5 pixel subunits. And again, it might sound kind of strange when everyone's familiar with pixels to be thinking about virtual pixels like units and subunits. But when you're dealing with different screen sizes and you're dealing with different screen resolutions, how many pixels are on the page, this becomes very, very important. Okay? And when we talk about that in scaling, you'll see exactly how that kind of that's implemented when you actually go to build the page. Now, in my application, I want to have a consistent header. I want to have a consistent silhouette, which will consist of a header and a margin and so on. And I want to do this so the title of the page, whether it's my brand or that particular thing that I'm looking at, just like when I'm looking at a magazine, I see the title of the article. I know that, you know, this article is about that thing that's in the title. I want to do the same thing with my app. Right? And by default, the templates, you know, put the header 5 units from the top. That's the baseline of where your logo would go or the text of the title of the page and so on. And in your design, that might end up being a different header position in your app, and that's fine. You're going to decide that when you're branding or designing your pages, right? But use it consistently across all the pages, right? This is a great default to start at, but if you have some other direction that you want to go for the branding of your app, do it consistently so that title always shows up at the same place. And if you look at the Contoso Cookbook app, we were very careful to make sure that Contoso Cookbook, the bottom pixel there and the bottom pixel of that profile badge, that always showed up in the same place, whether I was on, you know, whether I was on a cuisine page or I was on, you know, one of these recipe pages, or even in the profile page, right? And the reason why is that kind of gives a feeling of quality when you use those units consistently. If users move around pages and things kind of get moved around and kind of jumbled, it kind of makes them feel like maybe, you know, something's wrong with the application or you know, maybe something's wrong with their machine or so on. So you also want to think about having a consistent margin. And this margin, again, gives you a place to anchor the content on where the content starts on every page. It also enables this bump. So you can see here when I pan to the end of a page, it bumps a little bit and animates. Like having that margin there, particularly when you have another app snapped, it just gives you a place that you can reach with your finger without colliding with, you know, having that other app snapped over on the side or colliding with the ability to switch between apps, right? So it's good to have a consistent margin, right? 6 units is the default in the templates. Again, that might be different for your application, just depending on the design of your app. But go ahead and make that consistent across all the pages in your app. And same thing with the content region. Again, by default, it's 7 units from the top. This might be different for your application based on the scenarios that you're supporting. But do it consistently so people always know where exactly to look for that start of the content within your pages. And then you can use the content itself to kind of structure the app and structure the page by using, you know, the images, the text, and so on, and then positive and negative space. And that's just the space between things, right? So if you look at that first column of images there and then the text next to them, that 10-pixel margin, or that 10 pixels between them, shows that they're related versus the next column over, that next blue column, that's 80 pixels. And that shows that these are two different lists. And you can just use the positive and or the negative space between different items to show whether things are related or not. Right? So all those images over on the right-hand side are all related to each other. It's unrelated from the list of items next to it. And you can see that margin between them. And again, we did that in Contoso Cookbook because we wanted to show the difference between like different sections like featured and what's new versus things that are related, like all the things within what's new. Like the smaller margin between, you can see that these are items that are related to each other. And we can just do that just by varying the space, right? And the space between these elements. Okay? So another tool that we can use to structure our application is typography. Now, what you want to do within a Windows Store app is use typography to kind of build an information hierarchy or an information structure of your app. And you do that just by using a small subset of fonts and using them consistently across the entire application. So just like when you're glancing at a magazine article and you see the title of the magazine article in a very big font and all the different subsections of the article in a smaller font and then the actual, you know, text within the article in a font even smaller than the sections, your brain actually sees a hierarchy and sees a relationship amongst that data. And it's the same thing within software, same thing with Windows Store apps. Now, by default, the templates that ship with Visual Studio support the Sago UI font. You can use whatever font you care to use. You, of course, want to make sure that it's licensed for distribution with an app. You also want to make sure that it's optimized for screen readability for use in software, right? But other than that, it's really up to you to use the font that reflects your brand and your application. The one thing that you do want to do within your application is use a subset of fonts across a type ramp to show the relationship between, you know, the page headers, the subheaders, body copy, and any tertiary info or any extraneous info within the pages. And that, again, just gives a structure to the app, just like using the content itself does. And those font sizes are interesting in the fact that they line up very, very well on the grid, and they scale very, very well as you go to different screen sizes. So you can see here that 42-point font is, the 20-point font is half the size as the 42-point font, and they all fall on a unit or half unit as you go down through the type ramp. Okay? And within Contoso Cookbook, we definitely did that across the entire app. So you can see here all these sections, like featured and what's new. That is always a 20-point font across the entire application. And then the names of, you know, different people or different recipes and so on, that's an 11-point font. And then we have, if there's any like really tiny details, like, you know, attributing the photo or something like that, we use a 9-point font for that. But we used it consistently across the entire application. So it was really easy to see kind of the structure of the information and what was related to what, right? Whether I'm in a recipe or whether I'm within a review and so on, okay? Again, it not only provides a structure, kind of the skeleton of the app, but it also has this feeling of quality. If the fonts change from size to size, from page to page, people kind of pick up on that, and it makes them feel like maybe the quality of the app isn't that great. Okay? So the next thing I need to think about if I'm building a context-centric UI is how do I provide navigation? And maybe I did this in the past by providing a list box of all the different things or all the content that might be in the app or all the different places I can go. Or maybe if I had tons of information that wouldn't fit on a page, maybe I'd start adding tabs so people could switch between the different tabs and so on. Well, navigation in a Windows Store app is built into the content itself. And again, that makes that content-centric UI possible. And you want to create a navigation scheme within your app that makes it very easy for people to discover all the content and all the features within your app, right? And do it in such a way that it's instantly familiar to them. And you do that by leveraging some of the built-in navigation patterns and built-in navigation controls that are supported within the Windows Store app design language and APIs. Okay? So the first thing that you need to think about when designing your Windows Store app is the content itself is a navigation element, right? So for example, if you've got more content or more stuff that's going to fit on the page, rather than littering the page with a bunch of tabs and taking up a whole bunch of space, right, you can use that horizontal pan and just lay the page out this way and use panning as well as a peak to let people know that there's more content, and they'll automatically know to grab their hand and drag over to the side. right? And if you look at Contoso Cookbook just from the home page, right, I know that there's more content here because I can kind of see that peak over the side where Tom and Aaron's photos are kind of obscured. And that kind of lets me know that, hey, by the way, there's more content over here. Oh, look, there's favorites, there's my recipes, there's all recipes, then all these recipe groups, right? Which is a much better solution than having a tab on the page, a bunch of tabs that are, you know, taking up like this entire top of the page, and then having tabs where I can switch between all the different sections. I just use this concept of panning and this ability to show multiple pan pages and then different sections to provide that same kind of a ability to show more than one page worth of content, right? The other thing that I can do within my app is leverage navigation patterns and common navigation controls that your users will know just from using Windows 8, right? And they'll instantly know how to navigate your application. And if they're comfortable navigating your application, they're going to automatically want to kind of just discover new content, just kind of navigate around to see what's going on in your app, what features you provide, and so on. So what are those navigation patterns? Well, the first is the flat pattern. And you see this in the Windows Store app, the IE10 version of the Windows Store app, the touch version of IE10. Where you can set, you can navigate from page to page just by clicking on links, and if you want to add tabs, you know, you swipe up from the bottom and see the top app bar, and you say, "Give me a new tab." Here's the URL, and then you can switch between the tabs just by grabbing the app bar, that top nav bar, and switching between them. And that's all about fast switching between totally unrelated things. Well, the hierarchical pattern is all about navigating related sets of data. And most applications, with the exception of like games and document management or document creation apps, most applications will follow this hierarchical pattern. Okay? And when you look at this hierarchical pattern, it's kind of a hub and spoke model where you have the hub page, right? And this is the page that gets shown when you launch the app. This is kind of the heart of the app. And just like, you know, like a homepage for a website or the cover of a magazine article, you want to lay out your content and lay out your content in such a way that you can represent all of the different features and all the different scenarios within your app, right? So if you look at the hub page for Contoso Cookbook, what did we want to do? Well, we wanted to make it easy for people to find recipes, right? We wanted to make it easy for people to see what their friends were up to, right? And we wanted to make it easy for people to navigate amongst different recipes and find the one that they're looking for. So we laid out the hub page, so we had this featured area where we'd show new recipes that are available, right? See what's new and reviewed. We had this area, what's new, to show what's happening amongst all your friends, like my friend purchased the Italian recipe pack or he reviewed bouillabaisse. I wanted to support what their favorites, the recipes they've added, and then help them navigate to a recipe and find a recipe that they want to make. So when you think about your hub page, just like in the example of Contoso Cookbook, think about the different scenarios that you want to support and lay the content and the sections of content out so it's really easy for people to discover your content and your user flows or your user scenarios. Now, section pages are all about focusing on the content in that section. So if I have 100 favorite recipes, of course I can't show that on the hub page because my hub page would be, you know, 40 pages long. So I just show like a subset of like the last, you know, few recipes that you've marked as favorite. And then I want to make it easy as possible for you to go into that section, right? If that's the stuff you want to work with just your favorites, make that possible. Well, how we do that in a Windows Store app, right, is for a particular section of content like my recipes, I'm just going to show the top four recipes, like the last four that I added. If I want to go in and look at all of my recipes, I just click on the section header, right? If I clicked on the recipe, I'd be going to the recipe. That's the user telling me I want to go to the recipe. If I want to see just the recipes in the app that are just my recipes, the one that I've added, I'm just going to click on the section header, and that's going to take me to a page that's filtered to just the recipes that fall into that group, for example. So here you can see there's about 30 of them, right? And in these pages, it's all about finding the recipe that I'm looking for, so I do things like sorting and filtering and so on. Okay? And then finally, there's the details page, like a recipe page, where This is a fine-grained piece of content that helps me, complete a user flow like prepare a recipe. But if you structure your application in this way, users that have used Windows Store apps, like the Bing News app going into the NFL, then going into their particular favorite team, then that article for that team, and then going back up through the stack using the back button, they'll know how to navigate your app. It'll be instantly familiar to them. All right? So section navigation, just make the header itself a navigation element. So if they tap on that, they can go directly to a filtered page of just the stuff in that section. You can use a caret or a branded element to show them, like we have here, that it's a that there's more content than just what's on that hub page or that particular page. It's a visual cue to tell them to know that, hey, I can tap there and see more content. The back button gives users that sense of confidence. If they feel like they can go anywhere in the app and just look for the back button and hit that to go back to the hub page, to go back where they started, they're going to have that sense of fearless exploration. They're going to know that they can go and just kind of tap around and tap on content and go and explore, knowing they can always get back to the start. Like, they don't have to worry about getting lost. The app bar is a way to provide more sophisticated navigation than just being able to tap on something to navigate to it and to go back. In Contoso Cookbook, we wanted to make it as easy as possible for people to, once they're familiar with the app, navigate to the various sections as quickly as possible. So if I wanted to go to Italian, or if I wanted to go to Chinese, or if I ever, from anywhere in the app, wanted to go home, we just built that little app bar at the top that gave them the ability to navigate wherever they wanted within the app very, very quickly, right? And users, generally, when they start using the app, they'll kind of go through the hierarchical model until they learn kind of how the app works. And then after a while, they're like, no, I really feel like Italian tonight, and they'll just go directly there. That's a great reason to do an app bar. That's why we do it in Contoso Cookbook. Okay? And then Semantic Zoom, again, this is a really cool experience built into Windows 8, not only from the UX guidelines perspective, but from the platform perspective, that gives you the ability to have a hierarchical model where there, or a content model where there might be pages and pages and pages of content that the user can flip through, rather than, again, littering the page with tabs and list boxes and so on. But if they want to just navigate to one particular section very quickly, they can. And if you look at Contoso Cookbook, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, about 5 pages of paintable content just on the hub screen. Right? And if we wanted to make it possible for people to jump around on that hub screen and navigate just to the German recipes if they'd like, we do that through Semantic Zoom. And the gesture there is just a pinch gesture. And then they can navigate all of the content in the app just on 1.5 pages. And it makes it really easy for them to navigate around different areas within a large paintable page. Right? So what we did with Contoso Cookbook is we definitely wanted that because we knew over time we were going to get lots more sections of recipes and a lot more recipes. We wanted to make that easy to navigate. So we designed a Semantic Zoom that not only let you pinch down and see all the different groups, but we also put details within each group so you could see how many recipes are within each group. Right? So you could see that there's 4 recipes in there that are available. Okay, and that's just a different semantic view of the data within the app. Okay, so I've kind of done all the navigation demos, so you get a good feel for what we wanted to do with Contoso Cookbook. In Contoso Cookbook, we were definitely a hierarchical model. We had, the hub page, we had the What's New page, we had the My Recipes, the Favorites, and then the different cuisine sections. And then on each page, we did implement that back button so you could surf all the way down to the bottom and get quickly back to the top so it was easy to navigate the app. And then for users, once they started using the app more often, we added the Semantic Zoom and that app bar to make it easy to jump around the app and navigate very quickly. So the next section is commanding, right? So I've got a bunch of features, like I want to be able to mark a recipe as my favorite, maybe I want to pin it to the start screen. Those are buttons or those are features in my app that I could put directly on the canvas. But after a while, they'd kind of water down the look and the feel of my app. So with commanding, what I want to do is use a couple of tricks to provide all those same features, but without littering my UI with a bunch of buttons and checkboxes and so on. I really want to just take those core scenarios and make those shine. And for us, that was finding recipes and preparing recipes. So with commanding, one of the tricks that you can use is direct manipulation of the content itself to provide a lot of these features. And probably the best example of this that I can think of is if you just look at the start screen itself, right? So on the start screen, you can manipulate these tiles and move them around, right? You can unpin them from the start screen. You can pin them to the taskbar. You can do all these different things. But if you look at the tile for Contoso Cookbook itself, you notice that there's not a button for any of those things. We use direct manipulation of just being able to select the item, in this case the tile, and show commands on demand. So rather than having a checkbox that I would check and a bunch of buttons across the top that said make it smaller, make it larger, turn live tile on, turn live tile off, rather than using the checkbox, I just make the item selectable, right? And if I wanted to move that tile around, again, rather than giving it a checkbox that I have to look at every single time I look at that tile, I'm just going to use direct manipulation. We have touch, and we have software, so I can just move this guy around, right? So one of the tricks that you should think about within your app, within the content of your app, if you have, like, let's say, a list of items, and you want to make those rearrangeable, right? Just let the user grab them with their finger and move it around, right? That gets rid of that checkbox to select them, then all the buttons that you would litter the UI with in order to support moving it up and down and around, right? So think about the fact that this is a touch UI. Mouse and keyboard work as well, and those features will work as well. But think about what you can do with direct manipulation first, because just being able to move those tiles around and select them, as an example, really got rid of a lot of clutter off of the UI. The next thing you want to think about is on-demand UI, right? So what are my users going to be doing most of the time? What are the core scenarios? Build that onto the page. Everything else, use on-demand UI so people don't have to look at the button for marking something as a favorite or pinning it to the start all the time. Okay? Let me look at a couple of examples of that. So for on-demand UI, you have flyouts. So just being able to have a flyout that comes out like here saying, hey, you're about to delete this photo. You know, and you can light dismiss or you can click on the delete photos button. Right? Context menus, message dialogues where you have to, you know, confirm or reject the particular action before you can move forward in the app. Like, we're all used to those from other platforms or from, you know, the desktop days. But one thing that's probably pretty new to you when you first saw Windows 8 or first saw Windows Store apps was this concept of app bars. And this is on-demand UI that you can show, right, either from the user saying, hey, I'm going to I want to be able to, you know, navigate, or I want to be able to add new items, just swiping their thumb up from the bottom, or from selecting an item in the content, and based on that context, showing commands, right? And these are easy, really easy to use. Users will be familiar with them within a few minutes of using Windows 8. And if you design a great commanding structure this way, you can get a lot of those commands off of the UI and build them into the app bar so they're only shown when the user needs them, right? And again, it builds that context-centric UI and makes your scenarios really shine within each page. So when I'm thinking about app bar design, I need to think about how I organize commands into persistent commands that show up on every single page, page-specific commands, or commands that are only shown when the user has selected a particular piece of content. And if I use common command glyphs, like that are built into the Sago UI symbol font, and then use common app bar command patterns, users, again, just from being Windows 8 users, will know how to use my app, and they'll know where to expect those commands, and I can just focus on building great features behind those commands. Okay? So command icons come from the Sago UI symbol font that ships in Windows 8. There's common glyphs for, you know, moving back, moving forward, refresh, adding a content, removing content, and so on. You can leverage these. They scale across all the different screen sizes really, really well. Users are going to know that, you know, the plus symbol is the add command. They're going to be familiar with it, so you can just focus on, you know, building the feature behind it. But let's talk about how do I actually design those commands so they're predictable and they're understandable to users. So we'll use Contoso Cookbook, of course, as the example. The first thing you're going to think about is, what are the persistent commands that I want to provide on every single page? And for Contoso Cookbook, we wanted you to be able to add a new recipe from anywhere in the application. So if you think, oh, yeah, I got to take the recipe. My friend gave me a recipe card, but I use Contoso Cookbook, so I'm just going to go ahead and grab the app bar and say add recipe. These persistent global commands, they're always going to go on the right-hand edge. In particular, add, delete commands always go to the farthest right. And the idea behind that is users predominantly are right-handed. And if you use that right edge for the add or remove commands, users will always look for it there across all Windows Store apps. Right? So if you put it there, users will expect it there and they'll find it easily. It also, if you think about them holding the screen, it's also readily available right under their thumb, right? So it's an easy swipe and tap for users. Now, if I have more commands than just like the persistent commands or add and remove commands, global commands, where do I want to put those? Well, I could put them, just lump them all to the right and just keep, every time I add a new command, just put it, in the next spot over. But eventually, I'd get to the point where I'd have to take my thumb off of the page in order to reach the command, right? And in general, if you want a really fluid, great touch experience, you want to use that edge where your user's thumbs are going to be as much as possible. So what you can do is you can take the persistent commands, put them on the left, right? Take the page-specific commands, like, for example, the ability to pin a recipe, mark it as a favorite, or add a photo. And you can move those page-specific ones to the left, and then you've got the right thumb for the page or the persistent, and then the left thumb for the page-specific. And again, they're all going to be in that easy swipe, so they're going to be easy to reach. And again, it's going to be something that users are going to be expect just from using other Windows 8 apps. Now, you might get to the point where your app bars start having lots and lots of buttons, like within our Contoso Cookbook app, at one point we had a button for sorting by rating, sorting by name, and sorting by prep time. And it just got to be kind of cluttered. So what we ended up doing is actually having a menu, a text context menu, behind the sort button to make it easy to sort by all these different sort criteria, rather than having a button for each one. And that just reduces clutter. And you can use either a context menu, which would be each command would be text, or you could use a flyout itself and put whatever control you want. It's just like a mini page on there as well. So you could use a slider to control, like, prep time, or if it was, for restaurants, by price, and so on. And again, that just reduces clutter. Now, another thing that you want to think about within your app is hiding disabled commands. So if you had a whole bunch of commands and some of them only worked in a context, like that favorite and pin only works when you've selected a recipe or selected a friend, right? Rather than showing those all the time and having those clutter the UI, just hide them. And users will know that when they want to work with a particular piece of content or a particular UI element, they can just select it and they'll get those commands on demand. In fact, that's the next point I was going to make, is that selection commands, right, when I've selected content, I want to show the commands associated with working with that piece of content on the left-hand side. In fact, I want to make sure that's the leftmost. They're in the leftmost position. If there's anything that's page-specific, put a separator bar and push those page-specific commands to the inside. And the reason why is the user's told you something very, very specifically. They've said, I want to work with this thing or these things that I've selected. And so you want to make those commands as easy to reach as humanly possible. So we always put those to the left and push the other ones in, just so when the user selects something and that app bar pops up, they know exactly that the stuff that they can do based on that selected command is going to be right there under their left thumb. Okay? So let's look at this in Contoso Cookbook. So again, I'm just going to start from the home page. In Contoso Cookbook, we wanted to make it possible that you could add a recipe from anywhere in the app. Right? So that button exists on every single page, right? But there were also page-specific commands, like if I was in My Recipes, and I wanted to look through all my recipes and determine whether I wanted to sort them by rating, by prep time, and so on. All right? That command is just specific to that particular page. But when I start selecting things like this recipe, you can see here that I start getting the favorite recipe and the pin commands. And those are specific to the selection that I've made, right? So you can see the little ribbon come up whenever I select this guy and make it a favorite. And that's, again, on the left side, so it's really easy for me to get to. And if I go to a particular recipe, like steam bun baos, you'll notice that some of those selection commands become page specific. Why? Because when I was working in the lists, I would only show the commands based on me having selected a recipe of the 20 or 30 recipes that are on that page. Well, once I'm in the recipe, those selection-specific commands become page-specific commands. So we just put them automatically on the app bar so they were applied wherever I was within the app or whenever I was looking at that particular piece of content like steam bun baos. Okay? So the next thing that we want to think about is building a great touch experience. And if you play sports, you probably heard about people talking about like being in the flow or being in the zone, right? And a great touch experience really gives users to kind of the ability to really get immersed in your application. And maybe even, you know, if they're looking at sports stories and stuff like that, they're just enjoying those photos and those sports stories. They're not even thinking about the fact that they're using software. They're just thinking about that thing that they care about, their favorite sports team, their favorite player, and so on. And touch goes a long way towards that, right? If you provide a great touch experience and a great navigation experience, two particular examples, users are going to get lost in that thing that your app is great at. So what do I need to think about when I'm creating a great touch experience? Well, first, there's a touch language within Windows 8. There's 8 different gestures that you can leverage within your app. And the cool thing about leveraging those gestures within your app is that users already know them. You don't have to teach them how to use touch within your app. They know how to use Windows 8. They know how to use your app. And if you apply that thing that's, you know, specific to the Windows Store experience and add to it app ergonomics that match your scenarios and then a touch target size that matches your scenarios as well, you're going to have a great touch experience. So again, it's that thing that's familiar to your users and that thing that's unique about your app. So let's talk about that for a second. Here are the touch gestures that are built into Windows 8 that you can leverage within your app to make sure that your app not only provides a great touch experience, but every user knows how to use your app just by being a Windows 8 user. First is tap for primary action. And you've seen me doing this, and you do this when you use Windows 8 every day. I see a news story that I'm interested in. I want more details. I tap on it. That's a navigate. Or a button. I click on a button. Or a toggle. I touch it, and it flips. Press and hold to learn, being able to press on something and get a tooltip. Sliding to pan, either vertically or horizontally, people will know that if they see that peak and they see that there's more content than what fits on the page, they're automatically going to start panning and discovering more content. Cross-slide to select and command. We saw that on the tiles and then the recipes within my app. Just if the pan is a horizontal, I vertically just cross-swipe and that selects it, right? If it was a horizontal pan, I could do that horizontal selection. Cross-slide past a particular threshold turns it into a move, so I can move those tiles around or move items in the list to rearrange things in the UI. Pinch and stretch to zoom, whether that's an optical zoom, like getting more detail on a photo, or doing a semantic zoom. Turn to rotate, right, like you might see in some of the puzzle games or some of the various games. And then swipe from the edge, either to get the app bar or get the charm bar or get switch between apps or grab the top app bar. Right? Everybody knows these touch gestures. You can use them within your application, and then users automatically know how to use touch within your app. And you can do some really cool things, really novel things, like chaining together gestures. Like, for example, if I wanted to move the tile all the way to the end, you can see here that I just started off with a swipe to reposition, and then used a pan along with that to get a gesture that gave me the ability to move the tile all the way to the end, right, without moving it and moving it and moving it and moving it. So you can chain these things together to get really great experiences. So the thing that I need to think about that's unique to my app is ergonomics. How's my app going to be used? What does my app do? And then figure out how that'll affect the UI. So is my app, you know, a content consumption app where all I'm doing is, you know, maybe holding the tablet with one hand and tapping to navigate around, right? Looking at news stories, reading recipes, and so on. Am I doing any data entry, like maybe light data entry where I'm holding the tablet and I'm tapping with my thumbs, like writing a review in Contoso Cookbook and so on? Or is it intensive data entry where maybe they're going to have, you know, the laptop on their lap and typing with the full keyboard, or they're just going to be relaxing watching a movie? Think about the think about the scenarios, how your app is going to be used, and design around those postures. And think about the edges. Think about how people are going to use the app. For Contoso Cookbook, we knew that people were going to be, you know, a lot of times holding the application, maybe watching TV and looking at recipes, or they might have the device propped up in the kitchen. So we built the UI around that, the different touch targets, the way we used positioned the content, made it easy to reach from the edges and so on. Because we knew there wasn't going to be a lot of times that people were going to be, you know, sitting with a mouse and keyboard. So we thought a lot about that designing the app. The next thing that you want to think about is touch target sizes, right? How big do I have to make things in order for them to be touchable within the application, right? And this is just some data that we had collected when we were working on Windows 8 to determine what was the best touch target size based on, you know, the average finger size of the general population and how many times they would actually touch the target that they meant to touch. And what we came up with is about 7 millimeters or at the 100% screen size, 40 pixels as being the recommended minimum size. And again, you can tune that within your application based on the scenario, right? So if the minimum target size is 40 pixels, right, with 10 pixels between them, again, back to that units thing, you know, it can be larger or smaller depending on the scenario. If it's not that big of a consequence to click that button or flip that toggle or whatever, they can be smaller, right? Because the consequence of the user accidentally touching that thing is not that big of a deal. If it is a big deal, right, if it is high consequence, you might want to make those buttons a little bit bigger. So the chance of someone accidentally tapping on the wrong option or touching the wrong button is decreased, right? So users have a better touch experience with your app. And within Contoso Cookbook, we thought about that quite a bit when we were designing the pages. So there are a couple of different places. You know, throughout the application, we put a lot of the commands on the app bar. So if you were going to favorite this thing or pin this thing, we put it down on the app bar. But some things like core scenarios, like being able to accept or reject a friend request, we put that directly on the page because sometimes a recipe, most of the time when I'm using a recipe, I'm just going to navigate to it and look at the ingredients and then go make the thing, right? But for something like a friend invite, we actually put the controls directly on the page because when I see a friend invite, the core scenario for that is, do I want to accept Carrie's invitation or do I want to reject it? Right? So we put that directly on the screen here with these buttons for accept and reject. Right? And we tune the size of these and the distance between them to actually be 50 pixels. So it was very easy for the user to touch the one that they intended to touch. Right? So if I accept that proposal to be a friend with Carrie, I can touch on it, because if I reject it accidentally, I'd have to go back and ask her to be my friend and stuff like that. So we thought that that was a little bit higher consequence than the minimum target size, so we tuned it to be a little bit bigger so people wouldn't accidentally tap on the wrong one, right? Just like if you look at the What's New pages here, these content items are one of two things. Tom Berenger reviewed bouillabaisse. Do I want to learn more about Tom, or do I want to learn more about the recipe? Right? So what we did is we actually created the target so you could touch on Tom's picture to navigate to Tom. And if you wanted to navigate to the recipe, we made this again 40 pixels by 40 pixels. So it was really easy for users to discriminate what they were actually touching on. Did they want to go see what Tom's all about, or did they want to go see what the recipe was all about? Okay? So it's just something to keep in mind as you're tuning the UI and you're building your touch targets. Think about ergonomics, think about target size, and then use the built-in touch language so users automatically know how to use your app. Okay? So the other thing that you need to think about within the design of your Windows Store app, and we definitely thought a lot about this during the Contoso cookbook demo, was making the app look great on every device, right? Because Windows runs on a myriad of different devices, whether it's, you know, a 10-inch slate or a 27-inch monitor desktop, right? So you need to think about that within your design. There's lots of things that are built into the platform that actually make this very easy to do once you've come up with your design. But there is some thought that you need to make to make sure that your some decisions you need to make to make sure that your app looks awesome, regardless of your user and the device that they're using. So what are those things that I need to think about? Well, first is screen size. What happens as the user moves through the various screen sizes that are supported for Windows 8? I need to think about orientation. Am I going to support landscape by default or landscape or portrait? Right? What happens when they rotate the device? How does that affect my UI? Next is view state. So we support this concept of snapping an app, right? So you can have an app snapped off to the side so users can multitask. They can look at recipes while they're watching TV. Or you could be the filled app, right? So they're watching TV while they're actually making a recipe, right? What do I need to do to make sure my app looks great in all those states? And then finally, pixel density. If you look at an example of these are 11-inch screens. One's 1366 by 768. The other is 1920 by 1080. Right? And I've got a button here for posting a tweet. Well, that button, if it was 100 by 200 pixels, if Windows did nothing, that button would be really, really tiny on that 1920 by 1080 screen. Well, Windows automatically scales that up so the touch targets are the same size, regardless of what the resolution or the DPI is on that monitor. Right? And it does that for fonts, it does that for vector graphics, it does that for things that you do within like your styling and so on. Right? But you need to think about that if you're shipping any assets that are fixed size to support all the different scaling plateaus so your images and your buttons and all that stuff that are fixed assets always look awesome. Okay? And we'll talk about that in the scaling slide here in a second. So first, screen size. When I'm thinking about screen sizes, what I really need to think about is how to create an adaptive layout, right? What portions of the screen are going to be fixed, and what are going to adapt as the screen size changes? And then I need to think about how will that affect the content itself? And I can use media queries, or in XAML, I can use view states to adapt the content, right? Is that image going to get bigger as the screen size gets bigger, or am I going to show more of the images, right? And then I can use those media queries or view states to adapt the content sizes, the fonts, and the margins to have a great experience across all those different screen sizes. Now, a lot of this is built into the platform and built into the built-in UI controls. And I can leverage those in adaptive scenarios to make this easy to do. So if you look at just the base template for a split page, portions of this UI are fixed, like the header and the description over on the left-hand side. But the content area is adaptive, right? So I want to think about, as that screen gets bigger, what do I want to do with that adaptive content, right? Do I want to show more items? Do I want to show more white space? Do I want to show more content? Okay. So these are the strategies you should be thinking about when you're thinking about adaptive. Do I want to show more content? Do I want to make content bigger? Do I want to manage the white space? Or any combination of those. Right? So showing more content, like for this map, as the screen size gets bigger, I can just show more map. Right? That's really easy. I just set up star sizing that particular map control takes up 100% of the page. As the page gets bigger, the map, I show more map, show more content. I may want to make the content bigger. So if I'm going from an 11-inch screen to a 27-inch screen, maybe that image, the one in the upper left-hand corner that shows all the trophies, maybe I want to take that from being 350 pixels to 500 pixels. Right? And show more of that content, show more detail. I'm sorry, make the content bigger. Another thing that I might do is just manage white space. It might be get to the point where I show the content bigger and get to the point where Going to a 30-inch monitor doesn't make sense to show even more detail of those images because they're already large enough. You don't want to overwhelm the user. Maybe I just want to manage white space at that point, right, and show more margins. Well, the built-in controls are great for doing this. The list view control will automatically wrap the content according to the size or the area that it takes up, right? Same thing with the multi-column control, right, where it's going to show more columns of text. So if I think about how my content's going to be laid out and either use like a stack panel or use the grid within a stack panel within XAML or the grid within HTML and CSS, I can determine how things are going to flow on the screen and then use these automatically flowing controls like multi-column text and so on and create a great experience for every single user across every single device. And if you look at an example of that with Contoso Cookbook, let me just go ahead and start the simulator. This is a simulator that ships with Visual Studio 2012. So here's Contoso Cookbook running at 1366 by 768, right, on a 10-inch monitor. Now, at a 12-inch monitor, we thought, you know what, it really doesn't make sense to do a lot of tuning for that. It's similar enough. So what we did is we just played with the margins a little bit. So, you know, the images were the same size, and we showed a little bit more margin on the top and the bottom, right? But when we went to a 23-inch monitor, right, again, we did a little bit of tuning. The images were large enough. The touch targets, everything looked great. So we just tuned a little bit over the white space. But by the time we went up to a 27-inch monitor, we actually wanted to show more content, right? So on, I'm sorry, the second example I'd shown, the images did get slightly larger. Like the images of Steam Bun Baus and so on. Here, we made the images a little bit larger, and we're showing more content. So we actually tuned for both. So you can see here that I've got a lot more content that I can show across the page. And we did this, again, we designed for 1366 by 768 and then tuned via media queries or view states if you're coming from the XAML world to determine how much content we wanted to show or whether we wanted to show more content. And it just made for this experience where regardless of what screen size I was running on, it's always tuned for the device and looks great for the device. Okay, let's go back into the slides here. Another thing that I want to think about is portrait, right? If I turn that device, how do I want to adjust my UI? And optimizing the content for a vertical arrangement, again, if I'm thinking in an adaptive world, like here, and this is just the default template, I can automatically have the content flow for me and then use media queries and view states to tune things like the margins, right, and the space between items to be optimized for that vertical layout. And that's what we did within Contoso Cookbook. We definitely wanted to support, We definitely wanted to support portrait in case, you know, someone was sitting on the couch. Okay. And was looking at recipes. So what we did is we did a little bit of an adjustment to the margins and then started stacking the content vertically. So it looked great regardless of how you were using the device, right? So it went with more vertical content and then had less panelable pages, right? And we actually just took, if you look at the built-in templates, they show how they adjust the margins for a portrait versus a landscape layout. We just took those and did a little bit of tuning on the margins between items to get it so it looked great regardless of whether you're running landscape or running in portrait. Okay? So something definitely you want to think about. So your users, regardless of what device they're on, always have a great experience. Okay? So the next thing we want to talk about is Snap. So users love to multitask. And Snap State is the way that we do that. So for Snap, it's just a resize. It's the same app. It's just a 32-pixel layout. So what you want to do is you want to strive for feature parity as much as possible while adjusting the layout in order for it to work great in that Snap State. So For snap view, it's 320 pixels wide. It'll pan vertically rather than horizontally. And as much as possible, preserve the user flows and the features so users can have a full-featured app in that snap layout and adjust the layout accordingly. So if you look at Contoso Cookbook, for example, if I go to the home page, right, and what can I do here? I can look at what's new. I can look at favorites, my recipes, and then browse through different recipes and so on. If I snap this guy, you can see here we went to a vertical layout, but all the same features, all the same navigation, right? So I can go to Chinese. I can go to Steam Bun Baos and make the recipe and so on. So the app worked just as well whether I was snapped or whether I was running in full mode. Okay, so the next thing I want to talk about is the charms. So users are going to know what the charms are, and they're going to expect search features, share features, device control, and settings to live behind these charms. So how do I design for those experiences? Well, they're a core part of the Windows experience. If I build a great feature behind those, people will always look there first. So if I create a great settings experience for configuration of my app, I don't have to teach people where to find the settings, where to find the configuration of the app. They're automatically going to go to that particular control and find the settings for my app and being able to configure app for their particular needs. So there's two different things that you need to think about within the Windows 8 world and Windows Store apps. One is contracts, which is about apps working together, right? Like the share contract or the search contract. And the other one is extensions, which is your ability to extend or customize a Windows feature, like being able to have your app show up in the app picker. So rather than just picking, you know, photos from like documents or from documents or from the file system, that can actually pick from your app, like SkyDrive or like the Photos app. So an example of that is the search contract. Now, search is just, it's a default experience. If you've got content into your app, you've got features in your app, providing people a way to find that stuff very, very quickly and very, very succinctly so they can kick off one of your scenarios is an expected, it's an expected experience. So what we want to do with the charms bar is make it easy for people to find the search feature within your app and leverage the search feature. So that's two different things that you need to design for. One is the results page. How do I show people results and give them the ability to narrow down out of that long list of things exactly what they're looking for? And then how do I integrate into the search pane? So let's just do that with Contoso Cookbook. So in Contoso Cookbook, what we wanted to do is we wanted to make it possible from anywhere in the application that I could search for either ingredients, recipes, or friends. So I had shown you if I search for Tom, right? The first thing that I've done within my application is I've integrated and designed a search experience within the search pane itself, right? So before my app is even launched and running, right? So I can sit there and say, hey, ingredients are some of the things that you can search for. Friends are some of the things you can search for. I can also provide a list of query suggestions in there. So if I wanted to build a list of ingredients like eggs and noodles and stuff like that, I could build that into the search pane. But once they click on my app to actually perform a search, now this page gets to be all about communicating back to the user that, by the way, you searched for Tom. My results are for Tom, right? And then give them the right filtering so they can find exactly the thing that they're looking for. For us, in Contoso Cookbook, we want to make it possible to search for people. We want to make it possible to search for recipes by name, like Tom being in tomato sauce, or to search by ingredient, right? So the search charm takes care of how do they get to search, right? How do they kick off the search feature? And you, as the designer of the app, need to think about how do I design a great search experience, right, that fits in within the rest of my app and looks like my other list pages and gives people the right sorting and filtering to get down to exactly the feature that they're looking for. And then how do I integrate into that search pane? So I'm showing things like search suggestions, like ingredients, right, query suggestions, and so on. I'm actually going to go down to our final topic. We're kind of running out of time. So the last thing that I wanted to talk about quickly is the start screen, right, and tiles. So one of the things I want people to do with my app is I want them to launch it, and I want them to use it, and I want them to use it every single day, find new great content and new features, and so on. I want them to use the app so they tell their friends about it, and they fall in love with it, and they rate it highly, and then I get the Ferrari, right? So one of the easiest ways that you can get people back to using your app again is building a great start screen experience. People will go to the start screen every single day, right? And if all you ship is that default tile, like the Contoso cookbook tile that you see there, they're going to assume that nothing's happening in your app. And unless they're, you know, happen to be searching for a recipe that day, they won't launch it. But what I can do is build a great live tile experience to reinforce those scenarios that we talked about earlier to invite them back into the app, like you'll see with the Bing app and the Bing Sports app and the travel app, where they're providing updates of the content directly from the start screen. Again, it's an invitation to use the app. So what we wanted to do, for example, within Contoso Cookbook, and rather than having a back-end system supporting the demo, we just did this directly from settings, is we built in features like live tiles to support our main scenarios. So what are our main scenarios? We want people to know about new recipes, like a new featured recipe or a new recipe that's gotten a really high review, right? So we built in a tile update for that. We wanted people to know what their friends were doing, right? So we built in updates to show people, hey, one of the main scenarios is your friends are doing something fun. They just made that recipe, or they just bought that recipe, or they just reviewed that recipe. Or there's a cool kaleidoscope picture of all the things that are going on, like the new recipes and then what your friends just did. So Carrie just gave you an invite. The Italian recipe pack is new, stuff like that. We wanted to build those scenarios into the tile because it's a great way for users to discover what's going on with your app just from the start screen without ever having to launch it again. So when you're designing your app, you really need to think about how can I leverage the start screen and how can I leverage those toast notifications to invite people back into the application to see what's new with my app, right? Because if that tile just stayed the default logo forever and ever and ever, they'd probably assume that nothing's going on in your application and they wouldn't launch it. Maybe they'd turn the tile off or maybe they'd go and search for another cookbook app. But if there's always something new happening on the start screen, it's going to invite them back into the application. Okay. Okay, so let's wrap up. So what I wanted to do is just kind of walk you through some of the different experiences that are built into Windows 8 that you can leverage within your app to give people that feeling of being both familiar, right, with the Windows 8 experience, but also getting a feel for that unique and crazy and awesome thing that your app does. So what do I need to think about when I'm designing my app? First, come up with a great idea, create a great at statement, and have all of your features and scenarios reinforce that statement. Get rid of it if it doesn't. And then build a content-centric UI around those scenarios, right? So use direct manipulation whenever possible. Use on-demand UI to clear up and unclutter the UI. Build navigation into the content itself and leverage the built-in controls and patterns to make it easy to navigate the app and for people to discover what's awesome about your app. Build commanding into your UI such that if it's core to the scenario, go ahead and put it right on the page, like being able to accept that friend invite. If not, use on-demand UI so people can get at the features in a predictable and expected way without having to look at those buttons and those controls all the time. Again, taking away from the great content or the great features of your app. Create a great touch experience based on ergonomics and scenario and using the built-in Windows touch language. It's going to make that touch experience familiar to your users as well as tailored to the scenarios that you support. And then use snapping and scaling support within your app to make sure that your app looks great on every orientation, every screen size, and every view state. So your app users will want to use your app regardless of what device they have, regardless of how they're using the app, whether it's snapped or filled. And then use tiles and notifications to represent your app well on the start screen and the scenarios that your app supports, so users will constantly be invited back into your app to discover what's new and discover what's happening. Like with Contoso Cookbook, when my friends do cool stuff or we introduce new cool recipes. Okay? So that's Windows Store app design. It's about thinking about what is unique and cool and interesting about your app, and then what's unique and cool about Windows 8 that you can leverage to create an experience that, again, users are going to be familiar with, but they're going to fall in love with what your app is unique about. Okay? So have an awesome tech ed. Thanks for joining me for this session. I'll stick around for questions here if you guys have any. I'd be happy to talk about any of this. So have a great tech ed, and I'll see you guys soon.